Well, a very good evening and welcome to another edition of the Red and Blue Review podcast for Crystal Palace Football Club with me, Ian Noble, your host this evening. We're going to be looking back on the double header this last week, two games away at Bournemouth and, of course, at home to the champions Manchester City just yesterday. Wherever you are in the world, do please follow us and like us across our social media channels and especially subscribe to our YouTube channel. That'll be really, really helpful to us all. And as you can see, joining me on the screen this evening, we have a bit of a change of lineup. Tim Richards was always going to be on, our Fab representative. Good evening, Tim. How are you tonight?
I'm good, thank you, Ian. Hello, everyone. Good to see you again.
Excellent. And, of course, we have the lovely Teresa Baker joining us. How are you, T?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Lovely to be here.
Good, good, good. Nice to have a female opinion on the show. I've been told that we don't have enough ladies on, so you're very, very welcome. And talking to ladies, Nick Philpott, how are you, mate?
There was just no need, was there? There was just... Ladies and gentlemen, good evening, everybody. I'm sorry about the poor quality of hosting this evening, but I'll pass you back to Ian.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, so role reversal tonight. I'm hosting the show. Nick will do as he's told. And in the background, we have producer guy Greg tonight. Nigel's got the night off and Greg is kindly producing the show and he might pop on every now and again if he's got something that he wants to contribute. He normally watches, takes his Palace content from Match of the Day though, so a little bit dubious there. So guys, thanks for joining us in the chat. Some usual suspects there, so really good to see everyone joining us tonight. And do put your comments on and any questions that you want us to address, we'll try and get to some of them throughout the evening. But we are going to be looking back on these last two games since we were last on last Sunday, I think it was. We played two games in the Premier League away Bournemouth last Tuesday evening. It was a filthy night. It really was. Horrible, horrible conditions. We were all soaked in the away end, despite, you know, even undercover, you were still getting soaked throughout the whole game. And, of course, we were came away without any points at all from that one and losing the game 1-0. We'll talk about that in a second or two. We're going to talk about the other teams at the club. We don't just talk about the first team here. We're going to be talking about the Manchester City game, of course, yesterday and everything that went on with that. Obviously, despite the defeat, I felt pretty good walking away from Selhurst Park yesterday. It didn't feel so bad. It actually felt a lot worse when we drew 1-0 with Luton than the game yesterday. I want to talk about Glasner tonight, how he started. Your views on Glasner in the chat will be very, very welcome. And our league position, of course, we're now looking over our shoulder a little bit once again at the teams below us, thinking, have we got enough to stay in the Premier League for an 11th season and move on to season number 12 in the top flight? So without further ado, let's just look back at Bournemouth on Tuesday night. So have we got the lineup first of all, Greg? So let's have a look at this. So here we are. This is a team from Tuesday. Henderson in goal, Munoz, Ward captain, of course, Anderson, Mitchell, Hughes and Lerma in midfield with Wharton and Ayew, Mateta and Eze. And pretty much as we were, I think that was the same team from Forest. I can't be sure. Someone correct me if I'm wrong with that. And it was sort of as expected. On the south coast on Tuesday evening. Horrible, horrible conditions, as I said. And it was the kind of game that you just felt that could just go one way or the other very, very easily. And I'm just looking back on it now and I'm thinking, how on earth did we lose that, really? I know they're half decent Bournemouth and they've won 4 or 5 has been. But, you know, you watched the game, Nick. How did we lose on Tuesday night? You know, what went wrong?
I'm going to open the show, if you don't mind, with a little bit of a contentious comment. And Teresa and Tim, can you just mute your mics a minute? Because there's a lot of background noise and I don't know where it's coming from. I thought, and I'm quite happy to be jumped all over here, on both games. I know we're talking about the Bournemouth game specifically here. I had a bit of a concern both yesterday and the Bournemouth game, that one player in particular, one player that we rely on, and by the way, that noise has gone, so that background noise is in on one of those two mics somewhere, that there was one player of ours that I thought struggled in both games. And that'll be Eberechiaze. I don't think he played particularly well. In fact, I can tell you he didn't play particularly well against Bournemouth. And he also struggled yesterday as well. There seems to be a bit of comments out in social media that he struggles without Alisa in the team. Whereas Wolf was the talisman. Wolf was the guy that the go-to player. Eze doesn't seem to have, whilst I think he's a fantastic player and he's potentially going to be a real great player, okay, I think at the moment he's struggling with that leader role, okay, or you know, the look-up-to role.
The talisman role is what you're saying,
yeah.
Isn't it? Okay. You say he's going to grow into that player, but don't forget he's 25 years of age already, Nick. You know, he's not a youngster. Well, I think sometimes we think he's a youngster. He's not Alisa. Alisa is only 21, 22. But he's you know, he's mid-20s. And he was one of these players that probably came late to the Premier League compared to some others. But I agree with you totally. I think he had poor games. I mean, obviously, he was hauled off yesterday. But he made some poor decisions against Bournemouth. So if we're talking about that game, you know, he won the ball on the left at one point, and he did well to win the ball. It was sort of, it looked like he'd fouled the player, but he got away with it. The ref let quite a lot go, but he made the wrong choice. He had Mateta free in the box. Yeah. He tried to go to the left of his player, and if he just squared it to Mateta, he had a good chance on goal. So you're not wrong there in terms of the decision maker from Eze. And I just wonder whether he's fully fit. You know, I think that could be a part of it, that, you know, is Eberechiaze fully fit? Because sometimes the choices he makes, I don't get, because he's got the ability to go past people. We know that, we've seen it, and yet he often turns back and plays it back. And the other thing about him is that he leaves Tariq Mitchell exposed at times. And, you know, Wilf did a lot of dirty work in helping him on that left flank when he was here. But I don't see that from Eze. Tim and Teresa, feel free to unmute and come in here. What are your thoughts on what Nick has said about Eze having a bad game at Bournemouth? Oh, that could be UT, but try it.
I've got nothing in my background that's making any noise.
Okay, perfect. We'll just see how we get on. Go on.
I think Eze has had a shocking couple of games. I do wonder whether he is fully fit. And I think sometimes he tries to be a bit too much of a hero. He tries to do too much. There are several times where he could have passed the ball, even in the midfield, to get it further up the pitch, but he decided to take the Man City guys on and lost the ball.
Okay, let's talk about the truly contentious point of that first half in Bournemouth, when Eberechiaze did have the ball in the back of the net just before half-time. It was a lovely move. Here's the still with the line on it that was ruled offside. We had an incident in the Premier League yesterday where a goal was ruled out for offside. Different circumstances to this. This was Wolves' equaliser at home to West Ham yesterday. But this one here, Munoz plays the ball forward. Mateta, he didn't drop, so he's clearly not in an offside position. But when the ball is kicked, that's when it's judged. He's offside here. I want to know whether you think that's offside or not. I don't think it is. I really don't think this is offside. Where's the clear and obvious error here from the referee who doesn't give offside? He gives the goal. The linesman's right in line with it. The linesman hasn't given anything. I know they don't flag these days anyway, but he didn't flag afterwards. Mateta gets the ball out to Ayew. He crosses the ball, gets to Eze in the box. Cool, composed, calm, slots it home. Nick?
Two things there with that. Okay, first of all, Greg, if you'd be so kind to put that slide back up again now, I want to show people, I want to point something out, because that slide was taken from the TV picture. Now, whether this is perspective or not, look at the bottom of the screen and the 18-yard line, okay? Yeah. And then look at where the linesman is. That line is not straight, number one. Number two, Mateta is actually moving away from goal, okay? Yeah. So he's actually moving back towards the midfield there, okay? So how is he going to be interfering with play or even arguably, I mean, we're talking about his sock. That's what they were describing on the TV that night. It was his sock that was offside, but he's going away from goal. It's just absolute garbage. That's never offside in a million years. And Paul Holden has just agreed with me in the chat. The line is not straight. And that's what they took it from. Absolute garbage. They've got to get these technicalities right.
I think the key point here is that, excuse me, nobody in the ground called it offside. Nobody. The officials, the Bournemouth players, yeah, the Bournemouth crowd, nobody. And yet somebody in a remote studio somewhere slows it down, calls it offside. That's what's wrong with this decision. Tim.
Yeah, I mean, firstly, on Eze, going back to the previous point, I fear that he may be believing his own hype to a certain extent. I think he's been poor. I know he's coming back from injury, but he's trying to do too much. He's believing he can take everyone on, but simply he can't. So I fear partly it may be, is he fit? But being fit doesn't stop you making the right decisions. And he's simply not making the right decisions too often. Back to the Bournemouth game, that goal. It's, as we said to the Premier League when I was there a couple of weeks ago, it's a joke. There's so many cases where if you go back over lots of games, when the bigger clubs are involved, decisions are being made for them. Look at the game when we played Liverpool. 4 minutes it took them to look at that Hughes foul, so the penalty wasn't given. The game yesterday where it was a soft one, but as it was brought over, it was a penalty. Seconds and VAR made decision to carry on. I don't think it's offside. I agree with Nick. I don't know about the line being straight, but he was moving away from goal. You know for a fact, if that had been an Arsenal, a Man City, a Liverpool, a Chelsea player, it wouldn't have been given.
Do we really think that? That if it's a big club, yeah, that goal's given?
For sure.
In the chat, tell us what you think. Do you think it's a big six thing, or do you think that we're just unfortunate that it was off? You know, people are saying it's offside. It's offside. Technically, you're right, it's offside. But the point I was trying to make earlier, what badly it seems, is that nobody called it offside in the ground, in real time. So how can, you know, you're just interfering with the game too much. It wasn't clear and obvious. Goal should have stood, in my opinion. And even the Bournemouth fans next to us, right, this is the funniest thing. When the Bournemouth fans started celebrating, when the goal was ruled out, I had a bit of a go at some Bournemouth fans. Can't believe that, can you, from me? Anyway, I did. And a Bournemouth fan I had a go at, he was actually trying to tell me that he agreed that the goal should have stood. Ridiculous, I know. They could not believe
Nigel Crouch. Nigel Crouch has just said in the chat, what quality video they're using to be drawing those lines, okay? I think it's called Betamax, mate, okay? Because it's absolute... I mean, the technology is just poor. I think it was... I can't remember who said it in the chat just a minute ago, that the line was straight. Well, from what I saw, that line wasn't straight. It was at an angle like that. And, you know... Yeah, you could. I mean, maybe because we are looking over our shoulder a little bit. Yeah, it's Paul Glass that said the line is straight. Well, I don't know if it is. I mean, I honestly don't believe it is. Maybe it's because we are looking over our shoulder. We're thinking that everything's going against us. I don't necessarily buy into that. I actually think it's more important that they just get it right, not just for Palace, but for everybody else. I mean, yeah, it's just a nonsense.
Indeed. Paul Glance is here. That's good to see you yesterday, Paul, outside the Bedford after the game, by the way. Thanks for joining us tonight. So, you know, psychologically, it was a blow at Bournemouth, yeah? Psychologically, it's a blow because we think we scored. We celebrate for 2 or 3 minutes, get right back to the halfway line, and then it takes them two or three minutes to judge that actually it was off and goal doesn't stand. So we're going at 0-0. I don't want to speak too much about the second half. There wasn't much to say, really. They scored their goal on 79 minutes. I'm not quite sure what Glasner's thinking was, bringing Ozo into the side, playing him at centre-back. He clearly didn't have the pace. He was out-paced in a foot race for their lad to cross it. You know, it was a similar move as our goal that wasn't in the first half, really, I suppose, that makes it 1-0. Relatively poor goal to concede, I think. Munoz lost his footing in the box. He was there to stop it, and it was a wet surface. He lost his footing. There was one other talking point, I suppose. There was a shout for a penalty at 1-0 to them at the other end. Schlupp involved here. Wasn't a penalty. He kicks the Bournemouth player rather than the other way around. And, of course, where we're standing, he goes down like a ton of bricks. And we think it's a pen, but it wasn't. And it was a really poor night, really poor, poor night. Lose 1-0. Here are the stats. 50% possession for Palace. They clearly have more shots than we did. And more, you know, more dangerous possession in the final third. I suppose you'd describe that, wouldn't you? And fouls fairly even as well. So I think we just put it down to one of those nights, one of those bad nights. And there, that picture doesn't even begin to sum it up, does it? It was a horrible, horrible night. Everyone getting absolutely drenched to and from the game. But one piece of silver lining there, I suppose, is that Joel Ward, 300 Premier League games up now from Tuesday evening in a Crystal Palace shirt. An absolute legend. And well done to him. I guess this could be his last season playing for us in the first team. But he's done a brilliant job, a fantastic servant for the club. So congratulations to Joel Ward, 300 not out, or 301 not out now in the Premier League. Just a quick update then before we get to the Manchester City game. News of the other teams around the club even. Under-18s, they beat Norwich City 3-1 yesterday. And that's three wins on the spin for them. The under-21s, they lost 3-0 to Fulham in the Premier League Cup quarterfinals. That was played last Thursday. Their next two games are at Sutton. They play Everton tomorrow and Chelsea on Friday. So they come thick and fast for the under-21s. And the women, I think, are on an international break at the moment. And they next play next Sunday, as do Palace, of course. They have a 2 o'clock kickoff. If you're not going to Liverpool, you might want to go down to Sutton to see them play Birmingham City. And they've just got three games left now. It's Lewis away, and then the big one, Sunderland at home at Selhurst on the 28th of April. Nick?
Yeah, come on, Palace fans, wherever you are. Guys, I'm going to ask you again to mute your mics, if you'd be so kind. Come on, Palace fans, we need to fill Selhurst Park for that final game against Sunderland for the ladies. It's absolutely imperative. We need to get a big, big crowd in there. 5,500 is the target. Okay, that's what we need to beat. And we must get in there. I will be there that day. Please, please, please. If it goes to the wire like that, get in there and support the ladies.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I know you're very passionate about it all. And it'll be great to see them promoted to the Women's Super League, is it called?
Yeah.
One team goes up only. It was Liverpool that were promoted last season. And it's big bucks when she go up into that top division. It makes a huge difference to them.
Yeah,
and I mean, I think it'd be great for the club.
I mean, the point, I think the big point about the ladies is, I mean, we ended last season on, and we let a lot of players go. So we actually had a large personnel change this year, and we're going to have to do it again this year because I don't know if people are aware out there. All the ladies' contracts, the majority of the ladies' contracts, they're under one-year contracts. So even if they did get promotions to the WSL this year, they're going to have to renegotiate contracts for the WSL and start again. Most of them are on single-year contracts. So it's going to be a big investment by the club.
Brilliant. Okay. And one other thing to say about this coming week is that there is an open training session at Selhurst Park. Open to all season ticket holders and members. And you can bring guests as well. This is Wednesday, the 10th of April. That's this coming week. And it starts at 10 a.m. If you are free, get yourself down there. Of course, it's still the Easter school holidays. So I guess there'll be plenty of kids interested in watching the first team train.
Yeah, one season ticket allows you to admit five guests, but you have to register those guests. So get online or call a club shop and to get your free tickets.
Good stuff. Okay, so that'll be interesting. Good. So let's come to yesterday. Doesn't get much tougher, does it really? Manchester City, I was thinking we prefer playing them away. We've got a good record at the up there at the Etihad, but our place is a bit tougher when we play them. Let's have a look at the lineup again, then, please, Craig, from yesterday, if we can. So there we are. This is the same side that played a start against Bournemouth. And one noticeable difference on the bench, of course, is that Michael Olise was named amongst the substitutes. And Glasner said in his pre-match that Olise would get 20, 25 minutes. And sure enough, he was as good as his word. And Michael Olise came off the bench. Alas, didn't play with Eze because Eze had already gone off, but there we are. Tim, you're going to lead us through this this game yesterday. So over to you for that. Oh, T's disappeared. We're going to sort our microphone out, but there we are. Tim.
Yeah, so Man City, yeah. I'm not going to do the normal first half, second half, because we all saw the game. It's what we expected, the difference in class, yada, yada, yada. It was obvious. They obviously made some changes because of their upcoming Champions League game, so it wasn't necessarily even a full-strength City. Instead, I want to break it down to what I saw as the good and bad parts, because I think there were both. I think if you'd said to any of us before the game, you score two goals, you should have had a penalty, you've hit the crossbar, you've had other good chances, you take that. The difference in class, it's obvious, you can see that. But the good points, obviously the goal, the first goal, was a really nice move. Ward, Ayew to Wharton, lovely ball up for Mateta. Mateta showing good pace, good head, and an excellent finish. I mean, if City had scored that goal, match of the day, everyone will be going on about it. Over to you, Nick.
I was just going to highlight what you just said about the ball in from Wharton. Okay, it was a quality ball in from Wharton. And in fairness to Mateta, he had a lot of work to do there. A lot of work. Sorry, go on, mate.
He did have a lot to do, yeah. I mean, if that's Haaland, then, as you say, Tim, they're waxing lyrical about him, aren't they?
Yeah.
I just think he's getting better and better, Jean-Philippe Mateta. Oh, that's almost a poem.
Did you mean that to Ryan?
I didn't.
He's getting better and better, is that Jean-Philippe Mateta?
There could be a new song there with a boom, boom, boom. But, you know, he just is, isn't he? You know, it was a brilliant, brilliant finish. Really did very, very well. Yeah. So 3 minutes in, we're 1-0 up, Tim.
Yeah. And, you know, say we didn't deserve it, but we did well up until 3 minutes. But again, after that, you could see the difference in class. I mean, they were just superb. Good points. Again, Munoz, Lerma as well, I thought. Lerma's been getting better and better all season. I thought he did his role really well. Henderson, he made some really good saves. I mean, the one-on-one, tall, lanky, Norwegian, Haaland. The one-on-one with Haaland, you know, that was a great save. That was a really good save.
I thought the Rodri shot was the pick of the bunch, actually.
Yes.
When he got down to his left-hand side, you know, that's a top, top draw save. Really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he did well. Where I think he does let himself down is his distribution with the ball. I'll put that down as a bad side, but I'll talk about that later. But the good thing is the team kept going. I know we're talking about Glaslinator and how we think we're doing under him compared to Roy. But we kept trying. I mean, we didn't have the ball very much, but you could see that when we did get it, we tried. We put pressure on. I think as Ian Lyons said, the problem we did yesterday, we didn't press as a team. You had one or two players going to press, but that's not enough. You need to go in banks of four. You need to go up to press. I don't think we did that very well. What I would say on that, though, you're playing Man City, one of the best, if not the best team in the world. And trying to press that and play against that quality, I mean, it's very difficult. But we had other chances. Again, I think our weaknesses were shown with Ayew. He doesn't make the right decision often enough. I mean, he played quite well, but he should have laid that ball across. You had Eze, fairly unmarked, simple ball across. But no, he goes for the fancy, I'm going to have a shot. Hit the crossbar, but really that could have been 2-1.
Okay, so Are you saying that you think he should have passed the ball instead of shooting in those circumstances?
It's easy for me to say looking at the screen, but looking at the players who are going forward, Eze was clear. Ayew could see him. It wasn't a difficult ball. And the angle that Ayew was coming at, that's a difficult shot. That's going to be a hell of a shot. He almost did it. It hit the crossbar. But if he'd laid the ball across, Eze would have had a lot simpler. And in the Premier League, those are the decisions. Those are the things that win and lose games or cost goals. And we need strikers that can make those decisions and do that play.
Dawn says, no, he would have messed the pass up. Listen, let's give him a bit of credit here, Jordan Ayew. I'm sort of glad Jell isn't on this show because he would be giving him hell. But he picked Rodri's pocket to win the ball in the first place.
Yep.
Brilliantly. And so he's got the ball. And I think, fair play to him for having a shot, because how many times do we criticise our players for not shooting, you know, not having a go at goal? And, you know, I know he was leaning back a bit, but it really wasn't far away. I know it struck the top of the bar, but, you know, that's 6 inches low, that's in, you know, and we're all waxing lyrical. So I just think we...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I see your point. I see your point, Ian. But we can't afford that. We need to score goals.
Well, it's Manchester 5 points City, off the bottom. Yeah, it's Manchester City. And then you've got to take every chance you're given against Manchester City. I can't help thinking, though, Tim, that... if we'd scored that goal, you're probably going to come on to the Eze penalty thing in a minute. But if that's given as well and we go in 3-1 up, do you think we actually win the game or draw the game? Because I'm just thinking it's Manchester City. They just bring Foden on. They didn't even need Foden. And they win 4-3 or 5-3 or something, you know.
Yeah, but then, Ian, you say that. We were 2-0 down 15 or 10 minutes to go at the Etihad and came back to get 2-2.
Yeah.
You never know in football. If you get you need the goals. If you're you've always got a chance if you're leading. You know, this is, I think, where we've, coming on to the bad points for yesterday, it showed the glaring weaknesses in our team still. Very thin squad and not good enough up front. That's again, showed yesterday, I think. Mateta, I agree with you. He's coming on so well. And Edouard, his goal was a great instinctive finish. That was this, again,
scored that's hard. This year, isn't he?
Pardon?
He's scored one or two of those this year, where he's just caught you on, like, flipped it on from the outside of his boot. I can't remember. Somebody in the chat, let me know where it was. He's certainly done at least one this year, where it's very similar to that. Sorry, Tim. Over to you, mate.
Just before you go on, Tim, sorry, just it's really interesting to look at the difference of opinion here, because this is what's great about football, and you know, because everyone's got different views and there's no right or wrong answers here. So Richard Thomas says, I think the shot was the right decision. And Brett Kemp says he should have squared it. It was close and clear and obvious. He should have cleared it. He should have squared it. So, you know, one guy saying should have shot. Other guys saying you should have squared it, and there's no right or wrong answer, is there really? So, you know,
it's match of the day.
Hello, I'm like your VAR guy. I'd have shot. I think you got you. I'm along the lines of it's Manchester City, the shot might not present itself for another 30, 40 minutes or whatever. You threw on goal. I think you've got to go for it. I think he's had a good season. He's obviously fancied himself. So, when you watch it back on Match of the Day, you can clearly see that, they're in good positions. But I don't know, in the heat of the moment, you're fancying yourself, you're backing yourself. And he's backed it. And, you know, he has hit the top of the bar. And, you know, it wasn't the best execution of shot. But, I think I don't have anything negative on Ayew on that one. I think that's the right thing. The reason I jumped in with Mateta, you know, I think I just wondered if there was any kind of connection. And there might not be, but it was just a thought that I wanted to bring to the mix. With Glasner obviously having good experience in the Bundesliga and Mateta having played for Mainz in the Bundesliga,
yeah.
Do you think that there's any kind of like coaching connection? The fact that they've, you know, different divisions, different styles of football. Do you think that Glasner might have, you know, brought out some better qualities in Mateta recently? You know, I just wondered if you know, if that was a factor in why Mateta might have, you know, has had a good turn of form recently.
There's before we answer that, and I'll let the guys answer it in a sec. There's a pretty good article on The Athletic on Mateta, written, I think, just before the game yesterday. And it talks there about how he's having a bit of a, you know, good spell for Crystal Palace at the moment. And he's had little spells prior to that. It talked about the back heel at the Amex when it was behind locked doors, you know, that kind of experience, that kind of goal. It talked about the winner against Leicester City when he came off the bench in Roy's first game back when we had to win, you know, with a, when we stayed up last season. So, you know, he has had good moments in the past, but he's having some really good moments now. And I'm sure that Glasner is coaching the best out of him, and he has certain demands of his strikers, and Mateta is the kind of player that's going to listen to him well. So I'll come to Teresa first, then Unit.
Yeah, there's a couple of comments in the chat. Dawn says, when Glasner said we've been overplaying round bots and we need to shoot, that's about Ayew. But regarding Mateta, he's actually working hard. Before, he was goal-hanging a lot, especially under Roy, and he wasn't running. And now we're seeing he's obviously taken on board what Glasner said, and we've actually seen him in our own third, which we haven't seen, really. He's never really got back to defend, and he's done a good job. And he's holding the ball up a lot in midfield as well. I think he's really benefiting from Ollie, to be honest.
Yeah, Paul Gear, Real Panel says Mateta's improvement is down to confidence and playing regularly. Wouldn't disagree with that. Paul Glantz says, didn't Mateta want to leave in the summer because he wasn't getting game time? Yeah, I think he did, but he's getting that game time now, so he's probably pretty happy, especially as he's scoring goals. Nick.
Yeah, Greg, I hadn't put your correlation between the manager and Mateta. I hadn't put two and two together, actually. So it's a good point, well made. The other thing, of course, that nobody's picked up on is the fact that we're playing a different style of football now with the playing the wing-backs. And maybe that has something to do with the correlation of Mateta's form. He's getting more, a little bit more service in the box.
Yeah, and we talked about, you know, it's not necessarily strikers, but it's the delivery into the box, into that final third, into the penalty area, touches in the box and so on. And then in Munoz, I mean, we've got a player there, haven't we? A player that can cross the ball really well. A couple of times yesterday, especially in the first half, you saw the ball fizz across the box. Didn't get anyone on the end of it, but he did really, really well again to get forward. Less so on the left-hand side, but Munoz really will deliver for Mateta to get on the end of some of those balls, or Edouard, whoever it is in the middle of the park. Sure. Tim, we haven't quite finished the first half. Can we talk about the penalty that wasn't? You're muted at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, was it a penalty? Wasn't it a penalty? We've seen them given. For me, I've seen enough other penalties given like that. It was a penalty. But again, it just adds fuel to the VAR bias, because how quick was that VAR check? You know for a fact it would have been minutes the other way around. It was ridiculous. It's embarrassing because it's so obvious.
Okay, from the TV point of view, guys, you were at the game, so you won't know what I'm about to say here. From the TV commentary point of view, the commentator said within 15 seconds it had been waved away by VAR. So how can one VAR check
exactly
take 3 minutes against Bournemouth? Okay, and take 15, less than 15 seconds probably against City yesterday. There's your answer to your question earlier, Ian, about big team bias. Do we honestly think so? There it is in a nutshell.
Sure. Yeah, you've seen them given, haven't you? And, you know, clearly we're just not getting the rub of the green, but you sort of don't expect to get it against teams like Manchester City. And all Palace fans watching this, well, most of you will say it's definitely a penalty, although Facebook users said it wasn't a penalty in their eyes. So there we go.
That's Andrew Adams. That's Andrew Adams. What does he know?
Listen, it would have been soft, no doubt about that. But I tweeted because, he goes down, he gets pushed down, the ball's coming towards him. Who knows what he would have done if he hadn't gone down and stayed on his feet. So I think it was a pen, albeit it would have been soft. That's my opinion. for what it's worth. Others, T, penalty or not penalty for you?
By the letter of the law, it's a penalty. But then my question is, why aren't our players asking for it as well? Why did our players not ask for the penalty?
Maybe they didn't think it was.
You look at every other club, a player goes down in the box and they're surrounding the ref.
You see?
And our players just go, oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. So the first half was the better of the two from our perspective yesterday, wasn't it? Because second half didn't start well, Tim, did it?
No. No, second half started. Just keep it tight for a few. Oh, okay, there you go. Fair enough. So basically it was very much carrying on. The team stuck at it. I mean, two of the goals, I think, there were deflections, you know, maybe. But we kept going. We had chances. It wasn't, you know, it was towards the end of the game. I know City were 4-1 up. They took their foot off the pedal. But wasn't it good to see, A, we didn't take our foot. We still kept going forward. We still kept creating chances. Wasn't it also good to see the passion from Glasner? All during the game, he was up there. How different. I know it's age and that. But he really, you can see he cares about it. Second half was very much a lesson, you'd have to say, from Man City. I mean, the quality was... and again, it just showed Hugh's weakness for me. I love the guy. I think he's, you know, lovely bloke. But, I mean, our very thin squad. Anybody who doesn't think we need to spend big in the summer are kidding themselves, because this season has shown just how weak our squad depth is.
Teresa.
Okay, when you're saying spend big, who are you thinking of? What positions? We've got Wharton, we've got Munoz has come in. França is now playing for the under-21s to get fit for Premier League. Mateta's playing, Elise's back. We've got Eze, hopefully we'll keep them. We've got Gehis coming back.
Teresa, we're not keeping those players. There is no way we're going to be keeping those players.
Let's have a scenario where Glasner sits them all down and says, guys, give me 12 months with you. Let's give this a go. Nick's shaking his head. That's fine. Shake your head all you like. Let me just finish, T, and I'll bring you back. So let's say he does keep them all. Let's just say, as for example, he keeps them all. Where would you add? This is a good question. Where would you add to strengthen the squad? Tim?
Right back, left back, extra player in the middle. Because how many players have we got out of contract that won't be there? Look at how we've been playing this year. Look how we've been playing this year when we've had injuries and we've not had the quality. It's not necessarily about the number of players. It's the quality of players. We've shown, you see when Hughes comes in, it's no offence to Hughes, but he's just not up to the level that we need to perform. We're 5 points off the relegation zone. We've had a lot of injuries this year. Very true. But we've not had the quality of player to come in and help us keep going. So quite a few positions we need cover.
You see, I think Hughes is a good squad player. He wouldn't start for me if we had everyone fit, but I'd keep him. I wouldn't ditch him. Mark Gahey will be a Man United player, someone said. So the players that are at risk, of course, are Gahey, Eze, Elise. Don't forget, all three of those players have had their injuries this season. If you're a top club, you really want to spend top dollar on a player that's picking up injuries, Teresa?
I actually read an article in the French newspaper L'Equipe with Elise saying that he didn't want to go, that he wanted to stay at Palace.
Who knows? Because, you know, what they've said before might be one thing. You come in, play under Oliver Glasner might be completely different. It should be completely different to playing under Roy Hodgson. And therefore, you know, if they enjoy their football more and they see they catch the vision of it, who knows what could happen with keeping players. Nick, let's get your view very quickly on this because, you know, you're shaking your head there saying we're not going to keep all these players. Who's at biggest risk for you?
Okay. Paul just said Gihi and Elise will be gone. Okay. We have to sell to buy. And he's absolutely right. Don't forget the other subject nobody's actually picking up on is Elise's buyout clause.
That's what I was going to ask.
We think it's going to be set around £50 or £60 million, okay? Yeah. And there won't be one club coming in for him, and that will activate that clause. There'll be three or four clubs doing it, and it'll be down to the player then. Geahy looks like a player who wants to, to leave the club. And if somebody like Man United did come in for him, and I think Greg's shout about Man United is valid, he will go. And Paul Glanson's point about we need to sell to buy is absolutely right. We sell three of them, okay? We buy five, and that's going to cover everything you asked for then, Tim.
Good. Okay, let's move on a little bit if we can. It's a good debate, and it's a lot of conjecture. We just simply don't know what's going to happen. I think, Tim, we were undone down the left flank, weren't we, really, yesterday in the second half. It was Grealish, the player, that undid us most. Maybe there's the weakness. Your right-sided centre-back, Joel Ward,
yeah.
But you've got Munoz in that clip, in that picture there, defending at right-back. But it was Grealish that was involved in all three of those second-half goals that were... He was either the assister or assisted the assister, if that makes sense. But he was heavily involved. And of course, when the third one goes in, it's sort of game over. And it was a moment of brilliance from De Bruyne for the fourth, I thought. Played very well, didn't he, Kevin De Bruyne?
Man of the match.
Quality. Yeah, well, you could see it was coming. They were right for the first whistle. They're just the quality they've got is, and like we said, with the problems we got with injuries, with players out, we were never going to compete like that. And as I said, if before the game, if we said we'd scored two goals, should have had a penalty, hit the crossbar, other good chances, we would have taken it.
Okay, so the positive coming out of that second half was one of our substitutes coming off the bench. Great to see Michael Olise back on the pitch. We've already touched on him. But how good was he, Nick, when he came on yesterday?
Pretty ineffective, really, without Eze on the pitch. I've got a question for you. And
Hang on. Before you go on the question, let's just talk about Olise.
Yeah.
You think he was ineffective?
I think he was pretty ineffective. What did he create? Very little. Okay, my question is actually not about Olise. It's about Olise, about the manager. Roy Hodgson sends him out at half-time. Brighton warms him up, brings him on just after being injured for no reason at all. Okay, absolutely no reason at all. He then consequently gets injured. Were we 3-1 down at that time when he came on yesterday?
We were 4-1 down, weren't we?
Yeah, same thing applies. We're 4-1 down yesterday. Got no reason to bring him on whatsoever. Why did we bring him on? Suicide.
Because Glasner wanted to give him minutes. And he knew that he was actually fit this time. Clearly, at Brighton, he wasn't. No matter what the medical people told Roy Hodgson, because he broke down after 10 minutes again. But someone, Adorn said he was mustard. I thought he was really good yesterday when he came on in this little cameo that he had. The one that where he pulled it across the box and it was just wide of the post. Really good kind of thing. If he's got his eye in there and he's a bit more game time, he's gonna get that on target and he's gonna score goals. I think if he starts up at Liverpool, I just think that could be the thing that just clicks it for us. I know they're a good side as well, so we might not beat them. But I thought he played really well when he came on.
Okay,
Teresa, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought he had a good game. I thought actually the City players looked quite nervous but they were keeping a fair eye on Olise when he came on because they know the quality that he's got. I'm moving forward. I actually want to see Eze, Olise, Wharton, Munoz. This came from George actually. When are we going to see them all on the pitch against Liverpool? I want to see them all on the pitch at the same time. With Mateta.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Adam Wharton, we haven't spoken about him tonight, other than the pass for the first goal. But what a player we got there as well. He really is going to be a Rolls Royce of a midfielder, the lad. If he stays fit, it's going to be really, really good. But look, let's just wrap this game up then, Tim, if we can. Talk us through the second goal then very briefly, because it was Jeffrey Schlupp that was involved in this. And, he's had his critics of late. He's come back from injury as well. But it was a decent assist, wasn't it, for Edouard?
It was a lovely, it was a peach of a cross. I mean, I like Geoffrey Schlupp. I mean, but just before that, Edouard had another, again, whether lack of confidence, he should have taken, the ball came across, he should have taken it first time. He didn't, he took a touch, and that let the, I think, the keeper or defender come in and get it away. But then, yeah, the second goal was a lovely ball from Schlupp, arched across. And again, if you've got to give Edouard his credit on that one, it was a lovely finish. He got it from the defender. He didn't have to think about it, I think, is the difference. He didn't have to think about it. He just reacted, boom, and it was a lovely finish. It was a really good finish. And, yeah, all right, we lost 4-2, but just to wrap it up, I thought there were some positives. I thought there were some, you know, looking at what we had, I am concerned, though, about some things, but there were lots of positives as well, I thought.
Yeah, Nick.
Yeah, just very quickly, somebody in the chat earlier told me the answer to the question. It was against Wolves and Sheffield United that Edouard scored a very similar goal. Thank you for whoever that was in the chat.
Yeah, that was cool. The first game of the season, wasn't it? I think the Sheffield United one.
Yeah.
Okay. All good. So we lose 4-2 to the champions. They play Real Madrid, small match of Real Madrid on Tuesday night in the Champions League. A lot of European football this coming week. You know, we go to Liverpool next Sunday. They've got a European time Thursday night. So they'll be thinking about that one. Okay. So, Oliver Glasner. How are we feeling about him, our manager? There he is. The character of the players gives me the confidence that they will train hard. So it's nothing that we do. It's what they have to do. And they will do it, I'm sure, says Glasner. First six games, one win, two draws and three defeats. How does that compare with how he started at, say, Eintracht Frankfurt as manager in 2021? Does anyone know that?
I think they're about similar, aren't they? I don't think he had a great start
No, he didn't. You're right, he didn't have a great start. He had one win and five draws in those opening six games. So same points tally. And I think he started quite slowly at Wolfsburg as well when he's managed these top clubs. And obviously, he's taken them on to do great things. When he was manager of Wolfsburg, he managed Wolfsburg 87 times and he had a points per match score of 1.67. Eintracht Frankfurt, 97 matches, 1.51. Six only at Palace so far, 0.83. If he can get the points per match up to 1.5, then he's going to do really, really well for Crystal Palace. I know it's tougher in the Premier League, but he did take his German teams into European football and even win a European trophy as well. So he's no mug. And I think he's improving all the time. How are you feeling about him as a manager, Nick Philpott?
Okay. Number one, I think we need to... a little bit of reality check here about what he's actually, the cards he's been dealt with to start with. Number one, he wasn't due in until the summer. He wasn't expecting to come into the summer. He was obviously clearly doing his due diligence with the squad. And then he came in and picked up a bunch of crocs, which is what they are. We've had so many players out injured. This guy, we need to realise that we have got a fantastic manager in our midst here, okay? I'm not really interested in these games. As long as we survive relegation, I'm not really interested in it. Let him do his job, okay, over the summer. He will rebuild. He knows he's got to rebuild. The club knows he's got to rebuild. This guy is quality, okay? Somebody said in the chat that I'm being selective with the comments that I'm reading from the chat. Number one, I'm not doing the chat tonight. Somebody else is. Teresa is. But the point about him is we have got there. I think a lot of the other clubs within the division will be very jealous with what we've got here because we have a very, very highly thought of guy. I think he's going to be great for us.
Very good. Thanks, Nick. Would you agree with that, Teresa?
I would, actually, yeah. I mean...
Is that the first time you've ever agreed with Nick on this podcast?
Well, What did we expect? What did we, when he came in, everyone was just like, oh, Roy's too old, it's too old. Roy got sick. Yay, let's get rid of him. And now he's introducing a new system. He's introducing a new formation. He's had, what did he have? 3 weeks in Marbella, or Marbella, whatever it is, when they went off on that mini break. 3 weeks to introduce a new system. We need to give him time. I've already seen the Glasner out bollocks on Twitter or whatever it is now. Come on. We've all been Palace fans long enough to like go, you know what? He needs to be given a chance. And I actually do believe in what he's doing. And I like his energy on the bench. And I like the enthusiasm that he's got.
Quite right. Quite right. Ian, you made the point earlier about his enthusiasm on the bench yesterday, again, in a losing position. I think it's, you know, it's what we, you know, Roy, and we all love Roy, and John Knox, I saw your point earlier. Do we bring Roy back for the last game of the season to wave him off and say thank you to him? You know, lovely, lovely suggestion. I don't know if we'll do it or not, but the point about, you know, Roy was very, he would sit on the bench most of the time, arms folded, or stand on the side of the touchline, no expression on his face. You've got somebody here with absolute passion and desire to win. And he take, you know, he said in his post-match interview yesterday, he said, I can't take any positives from a 4-2 defeat. You know, to me, that's great. That's really, yeah, it's a positive signal. And give, and you're right, Teresa, give the guy time, give him a chance to build his squad. You know, you could argue that his results were no better in these six games than Roy's were for his last six games. And we know that Roy lost his job. Gentleman in the chat just a minute, Philip Von David just said, what happens if we get relegated? Do you think he'll, you know,
I don't even want to go there. I don't want to go there. But it's a nice segue into what we're going to be talking about next. Philip Von David also says, what about my energy on the terraces? Someone was saying to me yesterday, actually, that they're not going to go to the Fulham away game because they don't think they can cope with supporting the side for three games within a seven-day period. So there we are. So a nice segue into where we are in the league then. Will he be here if we get relegated? Are we going down? Question. Greg, have we got the league table, please? We've got the league table. There we go. So there we are. We sit in 14th place on 30 points. Nervously looking over our shoulder at Luton Town, who are just 5 points behind us in the bottom or in the top relegation place. I think we can probably safely say that Sheffield United, despite their point today against Chelsea. Oh, what was that? And Burnley are down. And I think Luton and Forest and the rest of us from us down are fighting out that final place. Forest, of course, lost the game to Tottenham today. I think it was 3-1 in the end, wasn't it? So that was a good result for us. But Brentford picked a point up at Villa yesterday. Everton got their first win in about 12 matches. Somewhat fortuitously, but nevertheless, they still won. And they've got another decision on points deduction, I think, this week, Nick Philpott. Is that right?
Correct. It's, if it doesn't come out tomorrow, it'll come out on Tuesday. Everton's point deduction will be announced this week. And the severity of the what's been labelled against them this time is actually worse than it was last time. And if you remember, I think they got 6 points reduced to 4, was it? Something like that. So there's no reason, I can't see any reason why it won't be 6 points. I can't see it. You know, they had mitigation last time. They haven't got that mitigation. They are banged to rights, guilty as charged this time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that could help us out a bit. But are we going down is the question. And if so, would Glasgow be here next season? Let's just take your views very quickly. And by all means, comment in the chat.
We're not
going. How worried are we on a scale of 0 to 10? That's a better question, isn't it?
One.
Teresa?
Tim?
It's only 5 points. It's only 5 points. And we've got some difficult games. The other teams have got difficult games. But I'm hopeful. But, you know, it's too close for my liking, to be fair.
So if you had to put a number on it, how worried would you be, 0 to 10?
Four,
okay. T's saying just the one. What about you, Nick?
Okay, Greg, could you put that slide back up on the table? Because there's one stat there that, again, nobody's picking up on. It's quite important, and I'm going to point it out to you. In the very first column there, don't care. Premier League is 38 games, and Brentford, Nottingham Forest, Luton Town, and Burnley have already played 32. Okay, so and we've only played 31. So A, we've got a game in hand over them, everybody else, and you're right to point out there's a 5-point difference between them. I honestly believe it's going to be points deduction dependent, Everton, Forest or Luton. I think, and to answer your question, Ian, I'm probably sitting at maybe a 3.
Yeah, I'll go with you. You know, we've got a game in hand. That game in hand is Newcastle. Sorry, Greg, put it back, please. The league table, let's leave it there. If you're listening to this on the podcast, you wonder what we're talking about. But the point I want to make here is how much green is there in those last five games? Hardly any. Hardly any in the bottom of the table. Look, you got Everton one game there. Forest won the game before the one today. That's what that green dot is. Luton Town won yesterday. But aside from that, where's the green?
So they've got, Ian, by the way you've just described that, the teams below us have got to win three games.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not there, is it?
And they have
no teams winning three on the bounce, are they?
No teams winning three on the bounce. And they've only got six games left in which to do it. So you're banking on somebody like Luton who on that stat there have won one out of five, putting three together on the bounce to stay up. It's not going to happen. Points on the board is the critical factor. We're on 30. We said earlier in the season, because of the quality of the teams in the league, that low 30s would be enough. One win, guys, and that's it. We're done.
But also, yeah. Nick, those lower teams, they've also got to play each other as well.
But they are
not playing any of them.
So, but let's look at the run-in there very quickly. I mean, our run-in is the toughest of them all, though. I have to say that. So here we are. We've got Liverpool away next Sunday. And then we play West Ham at home a week later. Then we play Newcastle at home. Now, both of those games are potentially winnable, but equally, we could easily lose them. And West Ham won at Wolves yesterday. Newcastle won at Fulham yesterday. So we know these teams can win away from home. We then go to Fulham. Now, Fulham are decent at home, despite their defeat yesterday. They've won 9 games at home this season, I think, I heard yesterday. So they're a decent side. They'll be relaxed. They're nothing to play for, really, mid-table. Man United, you know, they're still playing for European football. They come to Selhurst on the bank holiday Monday now.
Let's destroy their dreams.
And then the final game is at home to Aston Villa. We've got 7 games left. That is probably the toughest run-in of all the other sides. I'm just going to touch on some of these other teams now. So there's some of the other games involving the teams at the bottom. So Brentford have got to play Sheffield United. Everton have got to play Brentford. Brentford got to go to Bournemouth. You know, Brentford's running is a you know, they're on the fixture ticker. It's all green for them, you know.
It's not.
Everton, they've got Liverpool at home, which is a tough one. Arsenal away, which is tough. But they've got to play Brentford, Luton, Sheffield United and Forest. So, you know, they could pick up points. Forest have got to play Wolves at home, Everton away, Sheffield United away, Burnley away. Luton have got Brentford at home, Everton at home.
Man City, so, mate. So that's one of their games.
They've got City as well, you know.
They've got to play Man City, they've only got 6 games left, and one of them is against Man City.
Yeah.
And then they've got to win three of the other five.
Yeah, and it's only one of these teams that needs to obviously not get the points. So even if all the others do, you know, it's one of them only. So yeah, it's a worry. You know, we're not done and dusted yet. It's a concern, and I think, you know, the 3 or 4 mark out of 10 is probably about right. But it's a tough old run-in, and it starts again next Sunday away at Liverpool. So how are we going to get on at Anfield next Sunday? Ladies first.
I think we could actually get a draw. We could actually win or get a draw. I'm quite positive about it, actually. At least those back. I'd love to see, like I said, I'm agreeing with George here, Wharton, Elise, Eze, Mateta, Munoz, all on the pitch, all at the same time. Let's start more. Let's either get beaten by 9 or let's win it.
And a real panel says next week we'll complete the circle. We were the first team to beat Liverpool under Klopp, and hopefully next week we will be the last team to beat Liverpool under Klopp. We've won there before. You know, it's not the fortress that we think it might be, but it's going to be tough, that's for sure. Tim, what's your score prediction, mate?
3-1 loss.
3-1 defeat, Nick?
Out of those remaining fixtures, while you were describing all the games that are coming up here for us, okay, I thought to myself then, there is a surprise result in one of our fixtures somewhere. Don't know where it is. It could easily be at Anfield next week. And I trust the real panel. And I love his stats. And he's normally pretty bang on. We were the first one to beat Klopp at Anfield. Could we be the last one?
Well, Paul and I will be travelling to Liverpool together next Sunday. It's an early start for us for a 2 o'clock kickoff. And Paul, I think you're on the show next week as well on Monday to tell us all about it. So we look forward to that very much indeed. I think we've been going about an hour, so we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you to Nick, Teresa and Tim for joining me this evening. Thank you to Greg in the background for being a great producer guy. Thank you to you guys for joining us, and have a good week and up the Palace. Let's do it next weekend, guys.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.